Nell Frizzell, and this is The Panic Years. When I was 28, everyone around me seemed to be getting married, getting promotions, buying houses, and having babies. I was single, redundant, and living with my mum. At the time, I thought it was a private crisis. Now I understand it was just my panic years, and that is what this podcast is all about. I'm sitting beside the River Thames, or as it's somewhat unfortunately known along this stretch, the Isis. Behind me is a little field of these beautiful little purple flowers called snake's head fritillaries. To my left is a goose having a little wash in the river, and in front of me is a mushroom, like a fungus growing on a tree that frankly looks like a disgusting skin condition, but I'm sure will be very nourishing to whatever creature comes and nibbles on it. My guest this week is the comedy writer, performer and broadcaster, Siân Harries. You probably know her work from Man Down or The Froth with Rod Gilbert. You might know her from Twitter. Siân's one of those women I've followed for years, just wishing she'd be my actual friend. And so I created this whole podcast, wrote a whole book, took on a whole producer just so Siân would talk to me. You might think that's a rather extreme way to go about it, but once you've listened to this week's episode, I think you'll agree it was all worth it. Siân has written and spoken brilliantly about relationships, work, friendships, fertility, all the big stuff. So I knew she'd be a great person to discuss the panic years with. What we ended up talking about in some depth was quite why Siân loves weddings so much. I mean, she really seems to love them. And so as a sort of counterpoint to Sarah Pascoe's episode about feeling allergic to weddings, this is an interview with someone who might well be addicted to weddings. You'll also want to stick around after the interview because I'll be talking to a remarkable expert guest who can tell us all about weddings from the other side of the aisle. So please enjoy, and I'll see you after. How are you, and how is your body?
It's a bit cold. So I've started wearing ponchos around the house to make a point to my husband, who won't let me have the heating on until it's night.
Oh, the point's not, I want to be in a mariachi band, you're frustrating my ambitions, I'm going to wear a poncho.
I'd gladly make that one as well, but like, no, I'm just walking around going, oh, it's so cold, isn't it? And really layering up. Just to drive it home that some people would put heating on in the day.
I might be on his side with this, but I don't...
Are you?
I let the heating come on at about 6 a.m. till about 8 a.m. and then it's off again till quite late. But I think I'm a very, as you can see, I'm quite a high colour, ruddy woman. I'm basically, like when I was pregnant, it was honestly like being a sort of one woman heat machine.
Yeah,
I feel like it should have been monetized. We really didn't make the most of that.
Honestly, though, yeah, hormones. Oh my God, I am so hot to the touch, but then also freezing at other times. Like there's no... Do you know what I mean? I'm like a conservatory. I'm exactly like a conservatory. Either absolutely boiling. There's no time that you go into a conservatory and go, this is perfect temperature.
Also, like, I thought you were going to say like a conservatory as in you can see everything that's happening. Like,
oh, I'm an open book.
Very much a double glazing woman. You get, it's all there. You can see the whole
and
thing.
Full of wicker.
I'm so glad that you've very generously taken the time to talk to me because I really wanted to talk to someone about, well, I sort of think the panic years are pockmarked by these few sort of signifiers of something like adulthood or success or whatever. And they tend to be like baby showers, engagement parties, hen do's, birthday parties. And then the big one is weddings. And you, brilliantly, well, you're like... You're the most married woman.
Oh God, what does that mean?
No, you're not.
You just cemented into it.
You just sent me a very funny email that said that you'd had two weddings, which I'm desperate to hear about.
To the same man. As in, we didn't divorce in between. I'm not like Elizabeth Taylor. Like, we got married, we had a small wedding first and then we had a big party 2 weeks later.
That's great.
Yeah, it was a lovely way to do it. I think it kind of... Because we were just losing our minds trying to cater for absolutely everybody. And so you're going, well, it needs to be small and quite chilled for our close family who are quite elderly. And won't want to kind of, you know, festival vibe. So it just really helped to have that really small, intimate one. And then to follow it up with a big carnival, basically, where all our mad friends, you know, and then it takes away the stress as well of mad friends maybe mingling with elderly relatives. Mm.
I'm not married, but my partner and I have this sort of shorthand, which is like, can you imagine if like Callum was sitting next to Auntie Margaret, what would actually happen? But then one magical day, there was a Christmas once where there was this beautiful man who was sort of friend of the family who had never really had a job, and he just gambled, and he was a prodigious dope smoker. And we put him next to my, at that point, 89-year-old granny, who was like very home counties, pleated tweed skirts. And they talked about horse racing for 5 solid hours. And my granny was chain smoking and he was chain smoking. And I thought, oh, maybe this is what my wedding, my theoretical wedding would have been. It would have just been really unlikely pairings of people like that.
That does happen. I mean, that's incredible. We had everyone's names on post-its and then we were moving them around because, you know, you have to organise where... Because Rod was like going, well, we'll just let them sit where they want. And I was like, uh-uh, that isn't happening. That is a recipe for awkward conversation and madness when that's not happening. And so what we did, we had people we called buffers. So my 3-year-old little nephew is a buffer. Cute. Everyone likes him. He can talk to anyone.
Is your nephew Des O'Connor?
He's very popular.
Put him in anywhere. He can keep things moving.
He's wonderful, wonderful entertainer. And no, but you know, like people, benign people who are just, they will get on with anyone. They don't have political views that will upset people. They're buffers, and we'd put them in between our more colourful characters. But it becomes like the UN, you know, this kind of big, movable. Oh my God, we are you're basically managing other people's expectations of what they want from a wedding. That's what weddings can be.
Well, I'm interested in this because as someone who is not married, and I got into a lot of trouble for maybe 5 years as people around me were getting married without really meaning to, just saying, why? But why are you doing that?
I love that.
But I honestly thought, if you'd asked me at 16, what's going to happen first, legalizing drugs, euthanasia, or marriage is going to go? And I'd be like, oh, we're going to get rid of marriage for sure. That's going to be the first thing to go. Yeah. And I'm completely and actually quite happily wrong about that. Marriage seems to have had a huge rejuvenation. You know, cool, lovely people like you are getting married now. Why?
Why? I don't know. That's such a good point. Like, I genuinely, I can't answer that. It was so weird. It felt like, you know, sometimes when you're on a... we're really glad we are married. But it felt like, well, this is what we do next then, isn't it? I mean, and also I think it's just an excuse for a big party. One of the best parties we've ever had. Both of them, actually. The small, sedate one turned out to be a brilliant party. And then the massive carnival one was just so much fun. And there's something really special about having your friends and your family just all watching. It's only half an hour because, you know, the service is over really quickly. But all just kind of for half an hour, just thinking about your relationship and the commitment you're making. And it's huge. And when you walk in... I don't know. I'm not a traditional bride.
You can say virgin, Sian.
I'm not a virgin, yeah? But it was, honestly, the love you felt when you walked into that room full of people.
Oh, that does sound nice.
And they all, me and Rod walked in together because we'd already got married, obviously, but we walked in together holding hands and everyone just cheered. It was like, oh my God. We kept calling them the audience and people were going, do you mean congregation?
Were you doing like crowd work? What do you think, Jim? What do you think, Nancy?
Yeah, we're putting on a show. It was like, right, so really thinking about it. And I think that's it's one of the reasons it was such a good laugh. We'd really thought about people being able to see and hear, because a lot of people, I think it's the last thing on their minds, obviously, because weddings are so weird. And they're not performers. We gave everyone a drink before they came in. It was like midday, just to kind of get the wheels oiled so that the singing would be good. And we made sure everyone could see and hear so that they would feel involved. Like a comedy gig. It was just like a comedy gig.
That's amazing. That does sound like the kind of wedding. Because I've always said I'd like to be married, but I don't want to have a wedding. Because there's something about the kind of tight smiles, sugared almonds, pinching shoes, divorced parents, heartbroken bridesmaids that just makes me think, I can't inflict that on myself or anyone else. I've been to quite a lot of my parents' weddings. And in all of those circumstances, I think I had a feeling of like, well, this isn't going to last. And I think
no.
what you're... I really did. That, and I think I even made a joke. The best man at my parents' wedding said, some of us have had their doubts. And I remember thinking, yeah, I do. Because they'd separated for a year before they got married. So to be able to do what you did, which is to walk down the aisle and celebrate what is a genuine union. I mean, you were actually married, but what felt like a sure thing. That must be very...
It was a sure thing.
You were going to lose your virginity that night. It was
sure
getting
thing. No, but like we did argue. Me and Rob, we argued on our wedding night. My God.
Did you?
It's so stressful. Like the whole... You've been drinking all day. So many people need stuff from you. By the time like the evening is happening, there's so much drama from other people and whatever. And it's too much. You have to kind of pierce it with some kind of bickering.
I left my friend Gemma's wedding early because I wasn't drinking. I basically had a rule that I wouldn't drink at other people's weddings because it did not go well. But as I left, I remember watching her being handed a tray of fried chicken and she just burst into tears and said, I can't do this anymore. And I remember thinking, weddings are just so high octane. And this was, you know, exactly like you say, after 8 hours of straight drinking, an international audience / congregation, there's so much to handle that, of course, you can't go all night.
If you've never put on a party for 200 people, I mean, why would you? Unless that's your job. It is the most stressed you can be. And I'm somebody who was kind of priding myself on being this laid back, chilled bride. Absolute bullshit. Because you're going, people have come from Spain. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
They need the proper bread. Oh, God. I'd stupidly kind of got sucked into that. You have to look amazing. You know, what a lot of women do. You have to not eat bread for 6 months and all this. So I was absolutely starving.
You're like a jockey. You're like a tiny little underweight, jittery horseman walking up the aisle.
Honestly, so by the time I was just so hungry, I had everything. I had 2 chicken Kievs for my meal.
Brilliant.
2. Such a good day. But yeah, just the stress of it all. And I think it's more other people than yourself.
Yeah.
It's definitely more other people. If it was up to me, I'd be like, well, we're just having a good time, you know. But it's other people's expectations of you. I mean, Ellis James, the comedian, who's like my best friend from school, even he went, you've got to have a cake. Do you know what I mean? And I was like, Elle, we're thinking of not having a cake.
It's very funny that the things that come out in the way that I'd always secretly imagined what my desert island discs would be. Maybe they had secretly imagined what their wedding would be like. But come on. Like, oh, and here's another thing. I've had a few people ask me to help them pick out an engagement ring for one of my friends. And I've had to say, I can't, because I genuinely don't know what that is. I don't, like, you could show me 800 rings and I would just see rings.
It's so personal.
Unless it happens to be a ring that says their name, I don't know. How do you know it's the right one? Nan, that's what I want.
Or a mood ring. Nan. Mood ring. I mean, I have no idea. Poor Rod. Right, Rod bought me an engagement ring and it was absolutely beautiful, but it was not my personality. Oh my God, and that makes me sound like such a diva. But it was
doesn't. I admire you because you know. No, but I really admire you because that means you have a sense of self that can manifest in jewellery. So he proposed. Did he get down and...
No, we were in a bookshop. The Shakespeare & Co. bookshop in Paris, which is my favourite place in the entire world. And then there's this little cubbyhole where you can go in and a lot of people have written on the ceiling and different messages and left messages for friends and people. And Rod came out and went, go and have a look and see what I've done in there. And I went in expecting to see like a cock and balls. And so I went in and it just said, I saw in black felt tip, somebody written, Sian, will you marry me? And it was, you know, and it was lovely. And then he appeared because it's a little cubbyhole and it was March. So he was in this kind of puffer jacket, which in a bookshop is really loud. You know, so it's... And so he appeared and went, will you then? And then, so we're having this whispered conversation because a bookshop, you can't really make a noise. It's disrespectful to books. Have you been to this bookshop? It's tiny.
Yeah.
French people kept asking him to move and going, excuse me, you know what I mean? So he's like, oh, yeah, hang on. Oh my God, so typical. But it was lovely. It was so beautiful. But yes, the ring, he bought me a ring, love him, and it just wasn't my personality. And I remember saying to him at the time, because it was really glittery. And I just remember saying to him, I can't imagine going swimming in this. I can't imagine living the rest of my life with this. It's beautiful for like a night out or something. But can you imagine, you know, like cleaning a saucepan in it?
Brilliant. Yeah, yeah.
So he took me back to the shop and they were really like, you know, ring people really kind of, they knew what they were doing. And I was like, right, I want a ring I can go swimming in. And she was like, I don't know what you mean. And it's just like something that looks nice but is comfortable for all life.
Yeah. Have you got a ring I can mash potatoes in?
Exactly.
And a ring that I can swim in and a ring that I can pluck my eyebrows with, please. I know what you mean. In terms of your sort of politics and sense of self, what did it feel like to be asked to marry someone?
I loved it.
Really? Lovely.
I really loved it.
What in what way? What did it feel like?
Well, I mean, it's weird because it wasn't that kind of, it was, oh, let me think. It was lovely because it was us. It wasn't like, oh, a man is asking me. It was that, you know what I mean? Like someone you know really well and we're friends and we've discussed this loads. So it's not really a surprise, but it is a surprise because he kept telling me he was going to do it that weekend, but he didn't know when. Also, we kept bickering, so it was never the right time. And then, so he'd made me go back to this bookshop under the pretense that he wanted to buy, he'd seen a book about jails, and he wanted to go back and have another look. And I just thought, well, that's normal. So it was a surprise, but it also wasn't.
Was he wearing a t-shirt that said, marriage is a word, not a sentence, when he was buying his book about jails / it gets proposing to you?
Yes, and a very loud puffer jacket.
There is so much room for romance. I think where I have come a cropper is that I think I sometimes see a couple's personal, individual, private romance as somehow a judgment on how I'm living my life.
And it is.
And I'm right. I knew it. We've all been waiting to tell you.
Yes.
And had you always been to weddings as part of a couple?
Not always, because Rod was often on tour, especially on Saturdays. Like comics, that's the big night. So I was often a wedding widow. You know, and maybe Rod would turn up late or something. But no, I usually go on my own, which is fun because you get to meet
fun.
More people.
I liked it. I felt that a few weddings, I felt a bit like the Ancient Mariner, like this sort of slightly sparkly-eyed, vaguely hysterical woman on her own who would kind of go up to people and say, have you done this? Why are they doing this? What is this? What are we here for? What are we meant to do now?
Well, it's the bit where all the guests put the cards in a birdcage.
Oh, yeah.
If everyone wants to put their cards in a birdcage now, like, okay, what? I will do anything you tell me because you're the maitre d' or whatever it's called.
Can we have hats in a rabbit hutch and and now we're going to put the rings in one of those hamster balls and roll it down the aisle towards the couple.
It's mad, isn't it? I remember being in whose, you know, but so many weddings, you're absolutely starving by the time... Because you don't know how long it's going to be. You don't, and you can't ask them because love them. They're up to their eyes in mad stuff. So you don't want to go, right now then, we're going to arrive at 12. How long will it be until it's served. Do you know what I mean? Because I've seen people absolutely losing it because they haven't eaten for 6 hours. They've had two champagnes.
I've seen people with a Boots meal deal in their handbag, which I think is brilliant. And that's someone who's been to a lot of weddings.
Honestly, me and Izzy City, we take nuts with us because everyone is starving.
They're starving, they're drunk.
In heels
and thinking a little bit more about love than they have done for a while, which is also quite weird when you're sort of... Here's the thing, I've never got laid at a wedding because I think there is a funny thing where everyone is slightly on edge about what love and commitment mean, very aware that this is quite a profound, meaningful thing to enter into a relationship with someone. But funerals, I have... got laid.
Really?
Yeah, because really? There, I think, yeah.
Oh yeah, because it's more like, let's make the most of it.
It's a funeral. Everyone is like, woohoo! Like, life's for the living! Grab anyone you can! Whereas I think in a wedding scenario, there's a bit more of a feeling of like, well, there's one person for you out there. And it's like, oh, well, I don't think it's Dave, the cousin, who's come down in a megabus. I don't know if he is my soulmate.
Oh, megabus to a wedding. My God. I think we've been to very different weddings, love. I know of a lot of sex that's happened at weddings.
I know it's happening. It's happening around me. I'm just not having it.
I see.
I'm like probably ashen-faced, wondering what the nature of commitment is, and that's not so sexy. What you want is the recently divorced bridesmaid who's like, come on, let's all love each other now.
I didn't have bridesmaids.
Oh, did you not?
It's too much pressure.
Right.
No way.
Interesting.
I didn't want to put anybody in that position. I think we were very... We were very careful not to put any pressure on anybody else because that is not a good date.
That's really interesting that you see it that way because I've always worried that with bridesmaids, people are going to get left out. There's going to be a cousin or an old work colleague or someone who's going to feel like they should have been your bridesmaid. And then there's that weird sort of, you know, I've been enough bridesmaids now that they would all have to be mine if I were to do it. So, and that's the sort of funny, almost transactional part of it. I think
it is transactional, isn't it? I mean, we've met a few times. You are new to the country. Do you want to be my bride?
Your work life is, if I said unconventional, would you take that badly?
No.
What I mean is that you don't have a sort of 9-to-5 job that would be recognisable to my grandparents. So did it feel funny to be having in your work life, which I think is probably... for me, as significant as my romantic life, for that to feel quite unconventional and then to be entering into something that is quite conventional and recognisable and ritualistic and...
Well, we totally made it our own. So I think what really helped was that we paid for our own wedding. So obviously our parents came and loved it and they had a great time. But there was no obligation for us to invite people they would have invited. There was none of that. And they really respected that. So they took a step back and went, it's your thing, you're paying for it. And I think that really helped. Mm. It was unconventional. We didn't have a religious element. We didn't have any hymns. We sang the song from Mannequin on the Move. Islands in the Stream as well. We sang that. I know. You know, and it was just totally unconventional. And our vows were really, we'd written them funnily. So it was really kind of in our character.
Oh, okay. And can I ask you what you signed up for? What were in these vows?
Oh, God. Before we moved house once, I was ill in bed and I could hear Rod downstairs answering the door to this man who had a hold all of frozen meat. And I was trying to go... okay, what are you doing? But I was ill in bed. I was going, please, okay, what's happening? And I could hear Rod buying it. And I was like, we're moving a house in the morning. We have no room. Even if we were staying here for the rest of our lives, there is no room for a hold all of frozen meat. So that was one of my vows. I promise to love you, even if you still...
Incredible.
Bye.
I would have very, very happily come to your wedding. It sounds, I mean, all of them sound lovely, but that does sound incredibly fun.
It was fun. And we had a Colin the Caterpillar cake, which I'd made out of lots of Colin the Caterpillar. It's my favourite cake. And the cakes for weddings are like 500 quid. Insane.
It's wild. They're like a car that you can't drive.
And it's just, yeah. And they're not even like traditional wedding cake. I don't like it. I don't like the fruit thing and the marzipan and the awful. It's just horrible.
Marzipan is the devil's sebum. I won't have it anywhere near me.
I absolutely hate it. And this much really hard, rock hard icing. I'm going back to the 80s now, but like, you know, we just didn't want that. And so Colin the Caterpillar is my favourite cake of all time. It's delicious. It's seven quid.
It's wonderful.
I bought loads in Marks. I had my mum in Wales buying them. I had another person buying them over here. So we were all kind of like stockpiling. And the night before the first little tiny wedding, I cut off all the faces and stuck them all together to make a one big Colin.
You human centipeded Colin the Caterpillar.
Yes, I did.
Whoa!
And I ate all of the faces, bar one, on my last night of freedom on a massive four-poster bed. I ate eight, maybe nine Colin the Caterpillar faces. And hadn't been on carbs for six months.
That is so beautiful. That's so beautiful.
Oh, my God. That's my last night as a free woman. So good.
He must have been wild. You must have just been... Were you like when dogs eat raisins? Did you just go like... sweaty and shaky?
God, properly. I'm so sorry. I've had eight caterpillar faces.
My other big, what can I say, sort of alarm bell in the panic years era, are hen do's. Did you have a hen do?
I did, and it was really lovely because my friends know me well, and we just ended up going to a really bad... Well, we were supposed to go somewhere else, but we didn't get in for some reason. But instead of it being a disaster, we ended up going to a really bad nightclub, and it was so much fun. We were all wearing rod masks. And just we were just whammed dancing to really awful pop music. It was so much fun. I loved it. But I have been to somewhere... It's just so hard. It's such hard work. They last too long.
There's not enough psychological profiling beforehand.
I don't like it. And also, I don't really like being in big groups of women who don't know each other, you know, and aren't there because they all believe in something. You know, they're just there because this woman happened to work with them in HR. Do you know what I mean? Like, oh God.
But one night in a club is perfect. What I struggled with was when you were basically going on a mini break with a bunch of strangers, because one of you was marrying someone that either you'd known for 8 years and had been there through thick and thin, or someone that you'd not really met and you didn't have much of an opinion on. Have you ever had any terrible hen do experiences? Have you ever had a moment where you thought, this isn't right?
No, not terrible, terrible. It's me and my personality. I don't enjoy being tied to a big group of people I don't know, especially women, and that sounds awful.
We should have introduced you at the beginning. Sian is a notorious men's rights activist. Sorry, I always say comedy writer, and then I forget your other job.
My passion, exactly.
Your calling.
My absolute calling. No, I think it's just bad experience, isn't it? It's bad experience of being in groups where all we talk about is weight and what we've eaten, and you know, and it's like, oh my God, I have to get out of here. Not all of them. I've been to some lovely hen parties, which are very low key and lovely people. And I just think some of them last too long. That is my thing. And I feel rude if I leave after one night.
One night is enough. That's what they say about marriage. One night is enough. The decision to get married, obviously, it was a surprise, but one that you'd seen coming. Had you felt like a growing pressure to do that? Were there questions at Christmas? Were people staring at your finger? You know, all of that stuff.
No, I've felt more that about kids more than weddings, personally. No, I didn't. I think there was maybe something in my head which really shocked me, that kind of subconscious thing of, how come we're not married then? You know what I mean? That kind of niggling, even though we're not traditional at all. It was really weird. I think you're just trained. Well, I was trained to kind of think, okay, well, we're together. We need to, but then it comes back to that idea of having a big party, doesn't it? Because we're actually thinking of having our wedding party again because it was so good.
A hat
trick. Thinking of having,
yeah.
And we're not even, where I come from in West Wales, traditionally, my grandparents' generation, wedding anniversaries were everything because it was just an excuse for a massive party. Because, you know, my grandparents thing have got ruby wedding and silver wedding and, you know, all the different gifts and the colours. And it was such a big deal. And we're thinking of celebrating ours because just because the party was so much fun. I would do it again.
I think that's a lovely idea.
Isn't it? Because it's just a party.
To not be too on the nose, and you don't have to answer this at all, but...
Do you love Rod?
But do you, can I marry you? No. The question, are you going to get married? Apparently then when you get married morphs into, so when are you going to have a baby?
Yes.
Did that happen to you and how did you navigate that?
If I've had a couple of wines, I will, and it depends on who's asking, I will retaliate with, how's the menopause going?
Lovely. Lovely.
I've done that in the past and my mother's gone, shut. And it's like, well, what? You know, it's a really personal question. It's as personal and weird to ask somebody at a barbecue. Yeah, we have sidestepped it.
That's why.
I guess. Yeah, and it's odd, isn't it? I think it does tend to be, especially if you're not drinking, people tend to ask you all the time. It seems like fair game if they see that you're having a Coke. Do you know what I mean? Oh, yeah. And it's like, well, no, it is it is in the morning.
Oh, that's sort of significant.
Yeah. Oh, I see.
But it's also a question that they're really... They're only asking to get one answer.
Yeah.
Like people aren't really asking that question to hear the answer. You know, I would have happily, when people said to me, do you want to get married or do you want to have a baby? It's like, if you really want to hear the answer to this, I will gladly tell you, but I don't think you're going to enjoy it. And I don't think this is the place.
No, it's not what you're...
Auntie Barb. I don't think, you know, this is not the time. This is not the time.
Because you're going to find out that I think all children are a waste of time. Do you know what I mean? And you're at a kids' party.
Exactly. I'm going to really question quite a lot of your life choices and it's too late for you to undo them. So maybe you don't want to push that.
Though. It's odd though, because I'm sure before I kind of thought about it properly and grew up a bit, I'm sure I have asked people that question. You know, you fall into those tropes, don't you, of going, oh, you next, you know, that kind of bouquet thing, that thing when if someone throws the bouquet, then you catch it. It's kind of traditions that unless you step outside of it and start to go, what are we doing? You know, what is that?
Is anyone enjoying this? I do think there could be a moment at all of those things, birthday parties, weddings, hen do's, christenings, all of it, baby showers. If someone just stood up like a weather vane and said, is anyone enjoying this?
What are we doing?
Just this section. Do we need this section of this? It would be so nice.
It's so odd, isn't it? It's so odd. I remember in our wedding, I asked my dad not to give me away because I don't like that bit of the wedding, the bit where the one man gives me to some other man. I was like, no way is that happening. And I haven't taken Rod's name either. So we've kind of picked and choose the bits. And oh, love, my granddad, he made a speech and when he stood up, love him, he was about 86, I think, 87 when I got married. He stood up and he went, I'd like to congratulate Rod and Sian Gilbert. And the whole room went, no! And he was like, I don't understand, you know. And it's like, horse, you know, you can't blame him. That's just, he was trying to be sweet. But yeah, we don't believe in that. It's hard, isn't it? I didn't do a speech. I chickened out. I was going to do a speech.
You didn't? I'm surprised by that you didn't do a speech.
Oh, I was too everything. I was exhausted. I was emotional. I'd had two chicken Kievs. And I was exhausted. And Rod wasn't going to do one either, actually, but he did. He was wasted. And it took ages. And love him. We can't remember what he said.
It was probably just quoting Michael Bolton lyrics for 25 minutes and then sat down. The way you can just put feelings into words like that. What a true artist.
And just humming a Michael Bolton song. Why am I singing that?
Thank you, Sian. It was so nice to have that chat. And actually, at the end of the interview, when we recorded it, my lovely producer, Rich, asked me how long I'd known Sian, which is how I dropped the bombshell that very interview you just heard was actually the first conversation Sian and I had ever had, talking of love at first sight. Our expert guest this week is rather special. Roland August is a wedding minister who's seen it all twice. Known as the Mobile Minister and based in Las Vegas, he's played Elvis for Katy Perry and the Golden Girls, married couples at speedway tracks, in the desert on roller coasters, and who builds bespoke, inclusive, crazy weddings around anything from hobbies to your favourite films. Now, as someone who finds traditional weddings bewildering enough, I wanted to ask this man, who's performed thousands of ceremonies, often in rather unlikely settings, what actually is the purpose of weddings? So I started by asking Roland, how is a Vegas wedding different?
We do a lot of really crazy weddings here. People come to Vegas and they want something different. So they're not your traditional church or even civil type of wedding. They are more off the wall, out of the box, imagination filled. People use their imagination, like they'll think, what weird, crazy thing can we do for our wedding? And they'll come up with it, and then they'll say, I'm sure we can find somebody in Vegas that'll do that. So they're kind of working backwards from that standpoint. And so I get phone calls like, will you marry us on the roller coaster at the New York, New York? Or would you marry us at the top of the Eiffel Tower?
Incredible. Has there ever been one that was so weird that you said, I just can't do this?
I've never had to turn down a wedding.
He always says I do.
Thank you. He took the words right out of my mouth. No, people, I'm really a fun person by nature. So if you want to do something really crazy, I'm there for you. Because my thinking is honestly that you're in love. And you guys, your crazy matches that other person's crazy. So I want to just honor that and not get my own ego in the way. Like, you shouldn't be doing this, or this isn't, you know, proper or something like that. I kind of stay out of the way, and I'm kind of the bystander, and I'm just actually the facilitator trying to make the whole thing happen for the two of them in a way that resonates with their inner soul, because that's why they're there, you know, together to get married and to celebrate that day.
Oh, I did want to ask you, actually, what do you think the purpose of weddings is?
Really simple: to support and grow that other person. That's the only reason.
That's so lovely. To support and grow dressed as Elvis on a roller coaster.
You know what's funny is I always say to them, because a lot of times I am dressed as Elvis, and then I dress as different themed characters too along the line, like Dracula or the Grim Reaper or Alice Cooper or Slash or something weird, whatever somebody wants to come up with. But what I'm there for, I think, is to find out, first of all, who was the crazy one that had this idea and what made you do this. Recently, I did the craziest thing. I thought it was so weird. They wanted a Jaws wedding from the movie Jaws, you know? Mm-hmm. I was really perplexed, like, why would anybody want this? So I watched the movie. I outlined the whole movie, like, you know, what's going on here? What does the shark represent? What does the police chief on the island represent? And what are his fears and all of these things? And so I worked up this entire thing about how, you know, Jaws was basically like, you know, going into the deep with the unknown and coming face to face with your fears, you know? So then I went to them and I couldn't wait to meet them, because I'm thinking, this is going to be amazing, you know? So I said, whose idea was this? And he said, it was hers. And I said, and so what does the movie like mean to you, you know? And she goes, it's just one of my favorite movies. I don't know.
Oh no. And you've done a whole PhD on Jaws.
I did. I had my thesis on Jaws. So I used that anyway. And I'm sure I brought more to the movie than they'd ever thought about before. Probably at the end, they were more afraid to get married than they were before. Because I was talking, facing your fears and all of this stuff.
What's the thing that people forget when they're preparing a wedding? You've seen so many. You must think, like, I wish I could warn you in advance.
So many people forget the license. They show up for the wedding. They have everything else. And I've said, do you have your marriage license? They go, oh my gosh, I forgot the license. Oh my gosh, I forgot the rings. Something essential to the wedding is gone. and they've thought of everything else except that one thing.
Do you ever lend them your ring?
Oh, yes. I've lent them a ring several times. And once they took off with my ring. I lost my ring. And my wife was really upset. Why did you give that to them? I said, I just loaned it to them for the wedding and I forgot to get it back.
As a married person and as someone who's married a lot of other people, what is the sort of everlasting attraction of weddings? Why do people keep doing it? We've been doing it for hundreds, thousands of years. Why are we going to carry on doing it for another hundreds and thousands of years?
Honestly, I really believe with all my heart that we have a yearning in our soul to connect with another person. Not that that person completes us, because I feel that we're already complete in and of ourselves, but someone to go through life with, to share the wonderful moments, and to be there through the dark times. I think that's essential in all of us. And even if you don't need the piece of paper or the ring on your finger to symbolize that, I think that that's essential. And I think that people will always do that. And it's also, there's a little bit of hope there, you know, there's a little bit of a belief in that that fairy tale, that happily ever after. I'm going to find that one person that just, you know, their crazy matches my crazy, and it just works. I think that's
beautiful.
A big part.
How long have you been married?
I have been married for 29 years. Not all to the same woman, but yes.
You just love being married.
I love being married.
What is the worst or most embarrassing thing that's ever happened at someone's wedding?
So I go to a lot of hotels. I'm called the mobile minister, by the way. So I'm all over Vegas. Mm-hmm. So I got a call to go to the Venetian. I met the gentleman at the elevators. And as we're writing up, I'm asking him the normal questions that I always ask, because I like to make it very personal. How did you meet? What was your first impression? When did you know this was the person? Where were you? How long ago was this? And I try to get a little bit of their love story. As we're getting to the door, his hand is literally on the door knob. And he says, oh, by the way, she will be wearing high heels for the wedding. And I thought, okay. Maybe she's barefooted right now. Now, she was in the room taking pictures with the photographer. We opened the door. She was only wearing high heels and a dog collar. That's all. High heels and a dog collar. And the photographer looks at me and says, hello, Roland, with these eyes, like doll eyes. And I just treated the whole thing like it was totally normal. Like she was clothed, because he was fully clothed. And I'm thinking, all right, whatever, you know, this is how they want to get married. And, you know, it's in the privacy of the room, so whatever. And as we're leaving, as we're about to leave, he says, do you think we should get some photos with your wedding dress? And I thought, wedding dress? Why does she have a wedding dress? Why didn't she wear the wedding dress? I said, I think that's a great idea. You should get some pictures with your wedding dress. And then we left and we just looked at each other, the photographer and I, thinking like, that was so strange, you know? But that's not even the worst thing. The worst thing is two people wanted to get married in the nude at the top of Red Rock Canyon. Red Rock Canyon is about maybe 20 minutes outside of Las Vegas. And it has an elevation at one point of about 5,000 feet. So I said, yes, do I have to be naked? And they said, no, you know, we just want to be naked for our wedding. It's very important to us. I said, okay, I'll do it. So I go, we had to go early in the morning. We had to hike up the trail. And we get up there, they take off their clothes. And just so you know, people that want to get married in the nude are people that should not be seen in the nude, just so you know. So then they want to videotape it. So they set up the video camera. I'm there in my suit. They're naked. And they have vows to each other for each other that they've written. So they're, one of them's, honey, I just love you so much. And the other one says, I love you so much. And I just think you're the greatest. And oh my gosh, from the moment I met you, I just knew we were right for each other. And when I found your ad on Craigslist and I responded to it, I knew that this was the person. And it was going on and on. And something changed in the atmosphere. Like I felt the energy just shift. I thought something weird is going to happen. And I thought, I don't know what's going on, but something weird is going to happen. And I looked down. And the man had an erection in the middle of the ceremony. And I thought, okay, don't look down. Just don't look. Just look them in the eye. Pretend, pretend that's not happening. And just get on with it and try to get to the end of the ceremony. I get to the end of the ceremony and I think, phew, like I made it. Everything is great. And they said, you were the greatest. And they go, group hug. And I thought, no.
Oh. That is a joyful story. Honestly, I think what you've made me realize about weddings is that being open-minded like you are makes them such a joy. The way that you can go into all of these occasions and just feel happy and proud of those people and part of it for what they want.
Yes, yes, yes. From the bottom of my heart, I feel blessed to be standing in the presence, and this sounds cheesy, but I really mean it, to be standing in the presence of unconditional love. So in that moment, they're totally in love. They're totally in it. If he robbed a bank, she would drive the getaway car. And I'm so close to it that I feel it. And I feel like, wow, I get choked up because I think, wow, you know, that's what it's really like in that moment. If they could capture that somehow, you know, in the dark times and the times when they're really angry with each other, if they could remember, they would snap right out of it. But I see that at that moment and I feel like that's such a blessing. It lifts me up and I feel like I should be paying them to to be doing their wedding.
Roland, you're melting my flinty little stone heart. So how was it the first time that you were asked to officiate at someone's wedding? And how did that come about? Why did they ask you? I mean, I can see from just talking to you why you'd want you. But also, how was it the first time you were asked to do that as Elvis or as Dracula or on a roller coaster?
Honestly, it worked backwards. I was first hired as a singer to do weddings as Elvis. And because I'd done Elvis in a couple of shows, but it was different doing a wedding than doing a show. So standing in the presence of people that are really in love and they're looking at you like, wow, you're going to marry us today. It was really real. And it made me want to just forget the lines and everything that I was supposed to say, my script, you know, that I was supposed to learn. But it was very simple for me to just kind of talk about love because I believe in love. So that part was easy. What really happened then was I did a couple of years of just doing Elvis and doing different characters at this themed wedding chapel. So I was all these crazy characters. In Las Vegas, if we have any sequential number days like 11, 11, 11, 12, 12, 12, this year it was 4, 3, 2, 1, those days, oh my gosh, the whole world goes crazy and everybody wants to get married. Wow. So literally, chapels will be open for 24 hours sometimes on those days, doing a wedding every half hour. And that's just one chapel. So it was one of those days, I've forgotten what year it was, but it was one of those crazy days where we were open 24 hours and the owner of the chapel, and they were booked solid, booked completely, every half hour booked. He comes running up to me. We're going to try to do an extra wedding, like in the middle of all of this mayhem. Will you do it? Once you get done with this one, rush over here and do that one. And I go, okay, who am I? He goes, you're yourself. And I said, who is that? And he goes, you're just Roland. And I said, what's my costume? And he goes, you're going to go to the tux shop and put on a tuxedo and go marry these people. Just marry them like a traditional wedding. Now, I had never done a traditional wedding. I'd only done these goofy weddings, you know. And I said, well, what's the script? And he goes, just talk about love. You're always talking about love anyway. Just talk about love. So I didn't have time to argue. So I just ran down, got the tuxedo on, rushed up to the room, opened the door. I met the people. They were really nice. And then I just looked into their eyes when I started to the wedding. And they were looking at me like, you're going to marry us. We're so in love. And it just got overwhelming. Like I wanted to start crying. And I think I did cry because it hit me how real it was. So now I'm not standing behind as an observer, like an Elvis or a, you know, pirate or something crazy, you know, I was really myself. So I was vulnerable and they were vulnerable and it felt very intimate and very sacred. And I just came away on that moment, everything changed. And I said, I have to become a real minister because I really want to do this. This is way better than doing a costume character wedding because it was such a blessing.
That is so lovely. I can see why you're the best. I can see why everyone wants you. It's beautiful.
Thank you so much.
Hello. Welcome back. Nice to see you again. Thank you for listening right to the end. There are some little ducklings fluffing along in the water beside me. And, you know, I don't like to get controversial or too political on here, but personally, I find them adorable. There's also now two ducks fighting, which is slightly less adorable, but, you know, you wouldn't get the ducklings without fighting. Thank you so much to Sian and Roland August for talking to me. Thank you to my producer, Rich Jarman. And most of all, thank you to you for listening. Next week's guest is Miranda Ward, who's the author of my favourite memoir of the year, Adrift. Miranda and I spoke about miscarriage, fertility treatment, and the 5 years she spent trying to get pregnant. It was also much funnier than that might sound, so please come back next Friday to hear it. If you've enjoyed this podcast, and actually even if you haven't, please subscribe and leave a glowing 5-star review so more people can find it. Like making this noise, it's free to do and will make you feel brilliant.
This is a brand new audio production.